Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Ah, here we go. It's hour two, feisty as ever. Peter King, LeVar Arrington, Tom House. We're loaded today live from Los Angeles. It's the Herd, wherever you may be and however you may be listening. Fox Sports Radio, iHeartRadio, FS1. Joy Taylor is joining me. Joy, I do not want people to think, I don't like this, that they think I pick on certain athletes. Westbrook, I think I was right in the end. I was ahead of people. It felt like I was picking on him, but I was right. His game's not built for the modern basketball era, which is, it's a shooter's league, and he does everything great but shoot. So I've stopped talking Westbrook. Baker Mayfield, I tried to support at the end of the year.
You got bullied into stop into no longer talking Westbrook?
Well, and I just don't think he's as relevant, and I think I was right. Okay. So I feel like I'm piling on. Once I'm right, I don't want to pile on. Baker Mayfield, I was right. He's not a number one quarterback. He's not a number one pick. He's a quarterback, but he's not a number one pick.
Well, I wouldn't necessarily totally compare Baker and Westbrook.
No. They're separate cases.
Because it's never been about Westbrook's personality away from the sport.
No, he's a gamer, but he's just.
Yeah.
I think I was the first guy to say, I don't buy any of this Westbrook stuff. You can't win games in the playoffs if you're 6'3 and can't shoot.
Yeah, with Westbrook, it was fully, completely about his game. With Baker, it was a little personality stuff.
And by the way, I'm right on that because the organization has not jumped to re-sign him. Baltimore's going to re-sign Lamar. Buffalo's going to re-sign Josh. Cleveland's waiting. And they acknowledged the maturity thing was an issue. I was right on that. It hasn't helped him. And then there's Aaron Rodgers. That's the third guy I'm always picking on. And, you know, it's interesting. 12 quarterbacks have lost. One turned it into a soap opera. I've never disliked Aaron. Aaron hates me. I'm good with that. What I've said about Aaron, I like him better than Favre. I like him better than Bart Starr. He's the best Packer quarterback ever. First ballot Hall of Famer, gold jacket, highly intelligent. He's a lot of work. He's a lot of work. That's now been documented by even family members. He's a lot of work. But it's interesting because one of his buddies is going to be on last hour, Mike Silver, a friend of mine, NFL columnist, very smart. He went to Cal. Aaron went to Cal. They're buddies. They talk all the time. And there's nothing wrong with that. Mike's got a lot of great contacts. But he wrote an article this morning. Mike Silver did. I'm going to have him on later and press him because I'm a journalist. I'll press him. It says here, when Aaron spoke after the game, I believe he delivered a message to his bosses, one that roughly translates thusly, your way of doing business here in Green Bay has to change, or maybe I'm on my way. When GM Brian Gutekunst traded up in the first round to get a quarterback, Jordan Love, Rodgers did more than notice. He wasn't thrilled. He says, the GM left some potential impact players on the board when he made a move for Love. He says, as the Bucs celebrated their win over the Packers at Lambeau, how could Rodgers not have pondered the disparity between the two organizations' respective approaches? When Brady got signed, they went out and got Leonard Fournette, and they went and got Gronk, and they went and got Antonio Brown. Talented veteran players. Very good point. Green Bay, by contrast, went in a different direction. Basically a direction that said, we do things our way, and we're already looking past this era. So let me address this first thing. Find me the player the Packers could have drafted that would have made a difference Sunday. So the best player drafted after Jordan Love was Patrick Queen, the linebacker for LSU. Dog, that wasn't a problem Sunday. The Packers linebackers are fine. Patrick Queen would have played. He would have been in the rotation. But Green Bay's linebackers are good. Their linebackers are good. What about a corner? There was not a great corner taken after Jordan Love. Cowboys got a young kid they like. He's not a star. He could make mistakes too. Green Bay's problem Sunday was from the 10-yard line in, they were 2-for-9 passing. Green Bay's problem was in the second half, they got 3 picks. It wasn't their defense. On 2 of them, they were 3 and out. Aaron doesn't throw to rookie wide receivers. So let's say they draft a wide receiver. You think he would have looked at him more than Devontae Adams? Aaron's a trust guy. He doesn't trust you. Even Devontae Adams is a rookie. He won't throw to you. He won't throw to you. So tell me, offensive lineman, none available better than any the Packers have. Find me who they could have drafted that helped him. Now, the structure of the argument, to contextualize the argument and said, it did send a message I don't like. That's fair. That is fair. And listen, Patrick Queen would have been great in the organization. He's a good player. But Sunday was about a couple of things. Tampa Bay owned the first quarter. Okay, teams that lead after the first quarter in the playoffs win like 65% of their games. Tampa Bay also had the play of the game. Scotty Miller, Brady, last play of the half. Green Bay also made several key mistakes last. 12 men on the field. Coaching, arguable gaffe. Defensive holding, double clutch holding by a defensive back. So the better team won. I'm not saying the better quarterback won, because I think Aaron outplayed Brady for the second half. Tom outplayed Aaron for the first half. But I ask you in this article, who could have been drafted? Now, the messaging may have ticked off Aaron Rodgers. That I get. But there's nobody in the draft that was going to beat Tampa. We had no preseason. We had no OTAs. With Aaron's structure of that offense, I doubt a rookie would have even been looked at as a receiver or tight end. Green Bay has a number one receiver. Green Bay has a great tight end. Green Bay has great running backs. They didn't need it. Green Bay has a great offensive line. The problem Sunday was their defense got three picks, and the offense didn't do anything. Brought to you by Mercedes-Benz, the best or nothing. LeVar Arrington now joining us, former Pro Bowler, Fox Sports analyst. Listen, I understand players like Aaron Rodgers being mad after losses. Like, I get it. I totally get it. But when he goes out and talks about my future, LeVar, it's kind of a mess now the Packers have to clean up, is it not?
That could be a tad bit overstated. I think that was a big moment for Aaron Rodgers. We all know that it was a big moment for Aaron Rodgers. We talk about him being in the conversation of being one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time. Tom Brady is with a new team, a new season, a COVID season, Colin, and still goes into Lambeau Field on NFC Championship Sunday and wins. So to me, I think that whatever reaction, the fallout from that game is really an emotional moment for Aaron Rodgers. And as great a competitor as he has been throughout the course of his career, I don't have a hard feeling about it, and I'm not overreacting to what his reaction to it was. You could see when he greeted Tom Brady after the game on the field, the frustration and the disappointment and the letdown and the air out of the balloon had already taken place at that moment. So whatever came after that, you know, it was probably just pure disappointment in what he's feeling right now.
Were you surprised Brady went to Lambeau and won?
Yes, I was. I had Green Bay beating them. It looked as though Green Bay could have, should have, only hand grenades and horseshoes, but could have, would have, should have won the game in a couple of different moments that took place. But that's what you love to see when you see two of the greatest ever going back and forth against one another. There was a moment in time, that moment where they showed Aaron Rodgers on the sideline telling the guys, don't give up a touchdown. Don't give up. Just get me back on the field is what it seemed like the tone of the conversation was. And the defense did get them back on the field, and the offense stalled out for a couple drives. And I thought that was the difference in the game.
You know, I've always believed if you have a great defense and it comes down to the last 2 minutes, put the game in their hands. If you've got a great quarterback, put the game in his hands. Aaron's a great quarterback, and Matt LaFleur.
I don't understand the decision, bro.
You didn't like the decision.
It'd be about no. It's the NFC Championship. You lost in the NFC Championship the year before. Why not go for it? Nobody's going to have hard feelings. If anything, the bigger question is, why kick that field goal in that moment? Why do it? 2 minutes left, Tom Brady. LaFleur, look at Aaron. Look, Aaron's like, dude, like, what are you doing, bro? I'm Aaron Rodgers. That's Tom Brady. You do know that's Tom Brady on the other side, coach. Let's go for it.
By the way,
let's go for it. You took the game out of my hands in the biggest moment of the game. One of them.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. When, you know, there's all this talk about Aaron leaving. Could I not argue? Green Bay is perfect for Aaron. First of all, Packers don't have an owner. Aaron's king. It's a small market, easy media. Aaron can be bristly to criticism. He's got a number one receiver, good offensive lines. It's a young, progressive coach. When I hear about this, Aaron wants out. Okay, go to Boston with that media, try to replace Brady. Go to the Indianapolis Colts, who don't have a number one receiver, and face Mahomes in the AFC. Go to San Francisco, where Kyle Shanahan is going to have much greater control than any coach of your life. Like, the argument that Green Bay is not a good fit, I would argue, go to a city that's got better fans than Lambeau and a better home field advantage than Lambeau. I think Aaron is Lambeau. I mean, I think it works for him, don't you?
Colin, you missed one other point to add to that list. If he leaves, think about the pressure that top-notch quarterbacks are going to have going to a different franchise from here on out. Tom Brady has created a whole entirely different standard of how you're going to be judged. Joe Montana couldn't even do that when he went to Kansas City, right? Did pretty well. Brett Favre couldn't even do it when he left. Did pretty well. Guys have left and done pretty well, but Tom Brady has created an entirely different standard and expectation of what happens if you leave and go to a different team. So I think Aaron Rodgers has done so much in Green Bay, and to leave at this moment, it would be purely a decision that he has to live with and feel confident about. But again, if you have the familiarity of what you've created and what you've built as one of the greatest quarterbacks to ever play, not only in the game, but for that franchise, I think that's a hard proposition to say you want to go somewhere else. And then where is that somewhere else that would provide as much value as you have where you currently are? So I would totally agree with what you're saying.
Good stuff today, LeVar Arrington. Good point. Didn't even think about that. Brady has sort of moved the standard on what is expected when you go to a new team. I didn't even think of that. See, that's why we bring you on. Yeah. It's that kind of smart stuff.
It's all good, brother. Mm-hmm. It's all good. Appreciate you having me.
You bet.
Bye, Joy.
Hi, LeVar.
LeVar Arrington. We got Peter King, Tom House around the corner.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Saturday, Caleb Plants, one of the best pound-for-pound fighters in boxing, puts his perfect record and super middleweight title on the line against Cable Truax. Saturday at 8 Eastern on Fox and the Fox Sports app.
Men across America love Tommy John underwear. Go there now. 15% off. First order. See their site, TommyJohn.com/herd. H-E-R-D. Peter King interviewed Tom Brady right after the NFC Championship game, NBCSports.com, and he is now joining us live. So let's go to it. Tom can be very political if he's not comfortable with somebody. He's comfortable with you, so he talks to you, and you can get inside him. That kind of velvet rope that Tom does, he puts up for barriers for most people. But did it feel like many of the interviews you had done with Tom winning in Foxborough, did it feel a little different or more special this time?
Well, I think the one thing that if I could just describe Brady in that 10-minute period, he's just grateful. He wasn't euphoric. You know, he was very happy. But he's just grateful because he went to a team that has protected him well in the pocket, has had great weapons for him, and has a young defense, you know, some young defensive players, and two pass rushers who can give anybody fits on a given day. And so I think Brady thinks he went to the perfect place for him. But the one other thing I will tell you is that he really, like, he two or three times he mentioned his parents. And he said, this doesn't happen without being raised right. And, you know, having a base and understanding what wins in life. And he was very, he was like looking at the life of Tom Brady from 10,000 feet. It was an interesting conversation.
Yeah. Well, grateful is a great quality to have in life. Tom's a grateful guy. Should be, has great parents, and I love that. On the other side of the game, not that Aaron had a meltdown, but it was pretty dramatic after the game. And he's a very human guy. He said that before. He'll give you his emotions. He laid it right out. Matt LaFleur had to go clean it up a little bit. What do you make of the discussion? I don't buy it, that Aaron and Green Bay could be no more. I just don't. I think it's absurd. I think they both are great for each other. What did you make of it?
I mean, I was surprised. I could dredge up five quotes from the previous month where Aaron Rodgers said things, and I'm going to homogenize a couple of quotes here. It's one of the greatest honors of my life to be the quarterback of this team. Those were the kind of things he was saying. He had a very zen quality this year, Colin.
Yeah.
And he was very happy, as we talked about with Brady. He was grateful. And look, I think a lot of times, no matter how smart a guy is, if you talk to somebody 35 minutes after the most crushing loss of his career, you know, he's not going to necessarily be in position to say, gee, we'll get him next time. You know, he's going to be very unhappy. So I have no idea. I haven't talked to him. I don't have that kind of relationship with Rodgers. I don't know deep down. But two things that occurred to me. You know, what happened to the Rodgers who really was so grateful, you know, that he was a Packer and grateful to be in this place with, you know, Willie Wood and Herb Adderley and Willie Davis and Paul Hornung and Bart Starr and all that. And, you know, he told me last year, I hope I'm up there one day. And I said, hey, I think he got a pretty good shot. But the other thing is, can't Aaron Rodgers say after that series when clearly he wanted a chance on fourth down, but can he say, you know, I could have been better on that series. You know, I'm on third and goal from the eight. I threw a ball in the dirt to Devontae Adams at the goal line when he was the least open person.
Yes.
In the game. I mean, there was no chance that ball was going to be complete. And yet he had a pasture in front of him. He was going to get somewhere between 5 yards and a touchdown. I do not understand why he didn't take off. And why did he waste a throw right there? In my opinion, Aaron Rodgers would have scored a lot more points after the game if he said, I got to make a better decision on third down, because he should have made a better decision on third down.
Yeah. Let's go to the AFC. You've known Andy Reid a long time. It is... we said this yesterday, Joy and I did, he may be the easiest person in the NFL to root for. Sometimes he'll text me, he'll text me pictures of a play. He's like, hey, look at this play I just did, Cowherd. And, you know, obviously I'm deleted. I'm not going to send it to anybody. But he just delights in adapting and evolving and getting new plays. And for years and years, I felt like I had to defend him in Philadelphia. And then, I'm not overly religious, but the man upstairs said, I will grant you Patrick Mahomes. And I look at this, and I'm like, it's Dan Fouts, Air Coryell, it's Walsh, Montana, but maybe another. I mean, I look at this, I don't predict dynasties. I don't know what could go wrong with this. I mean, I don't even know what to compare it to. Like, you've known Andy a long time. It's almost like he deserved Patrick Mahomes. That's how I feel with Andy Reid.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think he thought there was a ceiling with Donovan McNabb. That ceiling was right here. And I think he looks up here and sees, here's the ceiling. You know, here's Donovan McNabb. Here's Alex Smith. And here's Patrick Mahomes.
When he got fired, Peter.
I think he believes.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
When he got fired in Philly and you talked to him, was there any rancor? Was there any bitterness? Was there any, I should have done this?
No, never. And I think that's one of the things that makes Andy Reid really special. He doesn't hold a bitter place in his heart for people. I've had twice in my time covering him since going back to 1995 when he was in Green Bay, twice in that period, he yelled at me so loud for something I wrote that I had to hold the phone out here. But that's the job, you know, that's sort of the life. And my feeling always has been Andy Reid is one of the great guys in being able to compete fiercely and then come back the next day and say, okay, what are we doing today? And Colin, you mentioned his imagination and sending him him sending you a photo and said, look at this play that we just made. That is the reason why he loves this job. He loves winning. He loves Mahomes. He loves the creativity of sitting there with Bieniemy and Kafka and his offensive staff and even Mahomes, you know, and Chad Henne sitting in his office saying, what do you guys think of this? Mahomes has invented plays that he's used in games. He's got no pride of authorship. He loves that stuff.
Yeah.
So I agree with you. I think he's going to do it for a while.
Yeah, it's good. There's people that win in sports, and it's hard for me not to root for Andy Reid. I'm not supposed to root. That's an easy guy. Belichick doesn't always make it easy to root for him, but Andy Reid does. Peter King, NBC Sports. Good talking to you, Peter.
Thank you, Colin.
You bet. Joy Taylor with the news.
No. Turn on the news.
This is the Herd Line
News.
You
know who's easier to root for because he's got a soft side, but you'd never think it, is Saban. I've talked to Nick two times privately. Nick, he's gruff, he's intense, but he's easier to like in person. Like, I know people that have dealt with Belichick in person, and Belichick can be curt. He can be difficult. You can make Saban laugh in person. I've made Saban laugh before. Saban, when I first met Nick Saban, you know what he said to me? So I'm just a loudmouth. So the first time I met Nick Saban was 10 years ago. I was at ESPN, and he came up to me, and he goes, I got to be honest. You're the one guy in the country I listen to, and you make me think. I go back to my office, and I think, oh, that's a pretty good point.
That's a very big compliment.
That's the first thing he said to me. Now, there's things he doesn't like that I've said. There's times he's gotten a little, you know, you've seen Feinbaum and him have had his moments. But Nick is very human. Beneath the surface.
His former players love him.
Listen, he demands a lot. The story on Nick, and Lane Kiffin and everybody's told me this. Nick defends the players to the end.
Yeah, he's hard on coaches. He's nice.
Hard?
Nice to the players. Well, I don't know if nice is, but he's like more endearing to the players.
Yeah, he'll defend players. He is a player's coach. He's rough on assistants. He's demanding.
I think Andy Reid is probably a little bit more believable to the public than the saved one, but that is a nice compliment, though. So LeBron played his first game in Cleveland in more than 2 years last night. Looked quite comfortable.
Oh, my
Season
God.
High 46 points in the game, with 21 of them coming in the fourth quarter. And he said hearing some cheering from a Cavs executive when he missed a shot at the end of the third quarter gave him a little extra motivation.
I felt like he was just a little bit too excited about seeing me miss. He was really excited about me missing, you know, that shot a little bit more extra than I would have liked. But, you know, he got a roof over his head for his team, obviously. And he was, he showcased that. So, you know, I knew I had another quarter. And the fourth quarter is my favorite.
I love a good petty moment. Delicious.
He enjoyed me missing just a little too much.
You know what, though?
Is this the shot?
Everyone can what? Kind of... Yeah, it's a missed shot.
Look at it. He turns over and looks at the guy. Look at it.
Bet. That's what happened there. Everyone can relate to this moment, though. Now, everybody can't relate to outscoring the entire Cavs roster 21-19 in the fourth quarter. But everyone knows that feeling where somebody says something, you heard somebody said something, or they say something crazy to you, and you're like, is that what you think? Well, let's see about that. It's really amazing to watch him continue to do
this.
Oh,
my God. That block he had last night, I was watching the post-game show, and they were just like, come on, man. 18th year, he's got more explosiveness than he's had in
a
year.
Every once in a while, like every, 50 years or so, we get blessed by somebody who has just been blessed. Like, Tom Brady is showing that. He's just an absolute outlier. Can't compare anything else. We compare Tom Brady to himself at this point. Like, we compare Tom Brady to his first 10 years.
And you never get him at the same time except tennis, where we got Federer, Djokovic, and Nadal the exact same time. Like, we didn't get...
At their peaks, no.
Right. We didn't get Serena with Martina Navratilova. You know, it's like there's a gap. Tennis is the only sport that said, we're going to give you three great players, the best clay, the best grass, the best hard court, exact same time. And what they do? They just beat each other all. They've all taken titles away from each other.
It was actually a bit poetic that happened as well, because LeBron at 36 and 26 days old became the oldest Laker player with a 40-point game since Kobe scored 60 at the age of 37, 234 days old in the final game of his career. And obviously it is, unfortunately, the anniversary of Kobe's death. Rest in peace, Kobe and Gigi.
Yeah.
So when the Nets traded for James Harden, there were obviously some questions about whether it was all going to work with KD and Kyrie. All three are accustomed to having the ball in their hands, yeah, being the star. But Harden is embracing his new role in Brooklyn.
I was in a role for 8 years, you know, controlling the ball, dominating the ball. Now it's a different experience for me, but it's still great. It's still basketball at the end of the day, and I'm lucky to be able to do more than just one thing on the basketball court. So, it's fun.
I'm not gonna lie, it's gonna take me a little time to get over Houston Harden.
I know. I watched this game too last night. I'll tell you, I didn't watch the end of this. Who won?
The Nets won.
Okay, then, because I watched the beginning of it. I will tell you this, though. He and KD play well together, from what I can tell. It looks like it fits.
I mean, it seems like it's working. They're 4-2 since Harden's been there. They are 11-8, fifth in the East. He's averaging 23.3 points, 7.3 rebounds, and 11.3 assists since he joined Brooklyn.
You know, here's what's interesting. I saw trade speculation with this team. So the Nets realize we got to get better defensively.
Yep.
Got to get a better rim protector. So I think they're going to win the East. I really do. I watched them play together for about 15 minutes last night, and I'm like, this works.
I thought they were going to win the East before the season started, but I think what they realize is they've got to go all in right now.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, if you watched LeBron last night, how do you feel? Like, come on. Just go all in right now. You have KD, Kyrie, and Harden.
You
might as well shore up. You obviously need defense. I mean, in the games that you've lost, that's been the obvious glaring issue. Get some physicality, get some defense, and go all in this year. Why not? You know you're going to have the scoring, and if Harden can continue to play this role that he's playing, it can work. So this is a really wild story. Cole Beasley's postseason performance just got way more impressive. He revealed that he played the final three games this year with a broken fibula. Said it felt pretty bad in the first game, but he took some meds and sucked it up because there was no way he was going to miss a playoff game. He caught 14 passes for 145 yards in those three games.
It's amazing what meds can do for football players and us.
There's a broken leg.
Yeah, fibula's up by your thigh, isn't
that
it?
That is insane. It's a
fibula?
Leg.
Google fibula.
Fibula, I think, is in your shin. I'm not a doctor, but yeah, it's
where
your shin.
Where is a fibula? It's your
the
shin.
The bone leg on the lateral side of the tibia.
The tibia to the fibula.
Yeah, it's on it's your lower leg. Broken fibula. That's
so basically
awful.
His lower leg as a slot receiver was broken.
Broken.
Yeah.
It always amazes me what these guys play through.
Oh, your brother's a great... I talked to your brother one time. Did he ever tell you the story?
Yes.
He had a ripped up foot. I'm like, how'd you get through it? He goes, it's called halftime. It's called needles.
Yeah.
Now, some of that stuff's outlawed now, but there was a time.
No, he's played through some... He was lucky in that he never had a real major, major injury. He broke his collarbone, and he had shoulder surgery.
It heals, but it's painful.
But yeah, the foot thing was bad, and then when he was in Washington, he almost died. He had this awful... I forget what it's called, but it's basically a blood pack thing, and then can give you a blood clot. It was really scary. But yeah, it's insane what they played through. Lacerated kidneys. I'm not doing anything. Anything is lacerated on me, I'm doing nothing.
Andrew Luck.
Nothing at all.
His stuff sounded painful. I remember Trent Dilfer told me one time in Cleveland, he got up on a Monday and crawled to the bathroom. I remember he told me this story years ago. We're having a glass of wine in Scottsdale, Arizona. He goes, I got out of bed. And Trent's thick. Trent's 6'3", 235. Trent's a big guy. He would look like an MMA fighter. Big guy. He's like, I got out of bed and crawled to the bathroom.
No way. No way. No way. We normalize this because we just talk about it every day. Bro, 10 broken ribs, blah, 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 blah. And just continue on with our day. Imagine having to do that to come to work today.
I have I'm not even sure if it's a cracked rib. My cartilage after skiing. I literally have to sit down when I sneeze. I'm like, oh, okay, that's painful. It's searing pain. I sneezed. Drew Brees had 11 of them and played 4 weeks later.
Went out there and put himself in a position to then
get
be
hit.
Smacked by another man that weighs 300 pounds at full speed.
It's unbelievable.
It is.
Joy with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Line
Tom News. Brady's got a throwing coach. He's a former major league pitcher, Tom House. Yep, he's Tom's throwing coach, has been for years, and he joins us next.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Tom House was a Major League Baseball pitcher, then a Major League Baseball coach. He's the father of modern pitching mechanics. Yesterday, I was ranting on about Brady being a better athlete than people think, and Tom responded to me on Twitter, and our people went out and got him. I remember Tom House as the pitcher for the Braves who was in the bullpen when Hank Aaron hit his record-breaking home run, and Tom House caught it. Then I didn't hear from Tom House for a long time, and I heard years ago, you know, he's Brady's throwing coach. And I did some homework, and you find he worked with everybody from Dak Prescott to Marcus Mariota to Carson Palmer to Drew Brees. And he is, how about this, joining us now live from down near San Diego. So let's start with this. The first time you were introduced to Tom Brady, the first time you were introduced, was he special? Were you amazed by his arm, or did you think, this is a project?
No, he showed up. I think the first time I met him, we had four or five other quarterbacks. Matt Castle was his backup in New England, and Matt brought him by. We were up at USC doing our research and our work, and here's Tom Brady with Matt Castle, I think. Alex Smith was there. I think Drew Brees was there. There were about five. There would probably $1 billion worth of quarterbacks that day. And Tom shows up, and he's just like one of the guys, big old tall skinny thing. And it was, hi, how you doing? We went to work. He went through a workout. And after the workout, he said, would you mind working with me one-on-one? And that was like 7 or 8 years ago, and we're still pounding around. It's all fun stuff.
I think his arm is underrated. I thought he threw the ball with so much velocity twice this weekend that his young, talented receivers couldn't catch it. How would you describe his arm? Average, above, below? How do you see it?
Well, he's got a plus arm across the board, and his accuracy and his mechanical efficiency have actually improved based on our numbers. We measure and quantify. And you'll listen to the experts and the pundits saying, well, you know, Father Time is undefeated and he's slowing down. He can't throw the long ball. Well, based on our numbers and our continual testing, he's as good now as he was when I first ran into him, probably more experienced. But I see no drop off in any part of his game.
Wow. By the way, Tom has a new sports app called Mustard, provides personalized training plans based on the videos that you submit. It's called Mustard. Check it out. You know, it's funny about you've dealt with so many different quarterbacks, and so many of the ones, you know, it always looks like Philip Rivers always had kind of weird mechanics. Drew, you know, there's some guys. What do you make of a Mahomes who's doing sidearm stuff? And he's throwing it left-handed. Is Mahomes a generational, you know, unicorn? Can you compare him to anything?
Well, what Mahomes has done is allowed football to change its gestalt. Football was pretty rigid on what they thought a quarterback should look like. And there were occasional, times when someone didn't quite fit the bell curve. But Mahomes has proven that there isn't just one way to throw the football. There's a way for you. And what it boils down to, he's a shortstop that can play quarterback and vice versa. The fact that he didn't specialize early, the fact that he didn't put, you know, one way to throw, you know, ceiling on himself, he's kind of opened it up for the new generation of quarterback, which is someone that's a great athlete that can run and throw or throw and run. And even the kids, like the youngster up in Buffalo, he's a throwing quarterback that can run. The kid in Baltimore is a running quarterback that can throw, and Mahomes is both. So he's probably the standard right now by which future quarterbacks are going to be judged. I think it's a great time for football, especially for quarterbacks right now.
Has there ever been a quarterback you've worked with, Tom, that you feel is underappreciated?
Probably the kid in Detroit.
Matt Stafford?
Matt Stafford is, for what he's been doing and what he's done with that franchise, I think he's underrated. I don't think he's underpaid, but he's underrated out there. Well, you're talking to somebody, my first year in the big leagues, minimum salary was $12,000. So I kudos to these guys for making the kind of money that they're making. But I think he's underappreciated. But basically, I appreciate them all. And every time a kid shows up, there's like one set of rules, but there's a million interpretations. And that's what we're able to do with our technology, 3D motion analysis and force plates to see how the muscles work, and obviously paying attention to recovery. And then the key to the whole thing is the mental emotional makeup.
Yeah.
All these guys are pretty special. Some of them are just Hall of Fame special. And that's where Brady comes in right there.
Justin Herbert blew me away. I watched him at Oregon. I'm from the Pacific Northwest. You've known him for a long time. Was his arm this good, 17, 18, or can a guy's arm get better? Because his arm looks as good as anything in the league.
Yeah, he's had a cannon for an arm since he was a peewee. And these really tall guys, they mature and master skills a little bit later than a 6'1", 6'2 quarterback. The thing that impressed me the most about Herbert was the fact that he's a mechanical engineer educationally, so his capacity between the ears was already set up, which is the one thing that's very difficult to master. We knew his body would end up being a hell of a quarterback, but what I saw early on was capacity between the ears meshed with a total body talent that was, well, a high draft choice. And it, you know, because of the circumstances, he probably was thrown into the mix a little early, but he responded. And I think you're looking at a future top quarterback in the NFL for a long time.
By the way, Hank Aaron passed away. He was a former teammate of yours. I always just thought of him as so dignified and classy. And you caught the home run. Do you remember it was like 1974 or something, if I recall? Do you remember it like well?
Yes, I remember it very well because that's the highlight of my major league career. That's the good news. The bad news is it was the highlight of my major league career. But the fun thing is that it was well planned. We had our territories out in the bullpen, all us relievers. And everybody talks about what a great catch it was. If I would have stood still, it would have hit me right in the forehead. I'd like to say I remember everything. I don't. I remember catching it, and then the next thing I know, I'm giving it to him. I do not know how I got from the catch to putting it in his hand at home plate. I just know that it's really fun to be a small part of a big moment in history. So when I think I've said this before, when I'm fibbing to my grandkids, the fib is actually the truth. So all good stuff.
That's great. Tom House, absolute pleasure. By the way, his new sports app is called Mustard, provides personalized training plans based on the videos. We'd love to have you on again. You look fantastic. He's 74 years old. It's like, you know what? When you're in a good mood and you're happy and you're helping people, it keeps you young. You look fantastic, Tom. Thanks for stopping by.
Thanks, Colin. I'll pal around with you anytime. Have a blessed day.
All right. How nice is that? He looked great. Just when you know what, when you're doing things for others and you're helping people, I think it keeps you young.
It does.
He looks fantastic.
You don't age as much when you're not problematic.
Yeah, no kidding. Not screaming at people on the angry bird. Find the perfect bouquet for your Valentine's. It's easy. Go to 1-800-Flowers.com. The code is HEARD. You can get 24 roses, multicolored for $29, or upgrade to 24 red roses for just $10 more. How about that? So who's coming up? Mike Silver. Now, Mike Silver's friends with Aaron Rodgers because they both went to Cal, and Cal people, you know, insufferable because they're all jealous of Stanford. So Silver and Rodgers are good buddies, and Rodgers doesn't like me, so Mike's going to come after me hard next hour. You watch. And I'm going to need help.
Need backup?
Yeah, I need surveillance. I need help. I need backup. You know, as I said before, people always go, oh, you hate Baker. No, I don't. Joy and I root for good football. What if we had 32 bad quarterbacks? We would come here Monday and just be, but instead I root for Herbert and Baker and Lamar and
now, we don't mind it being a little interesting while playing good football.
Yeah, I mean, there are guys. I mean, Tom Brady is not the most lively quote. Aaron actually has given us shows and segments. Maybe I should defend him for that. Hour 3 in the Herd on a Tuesday next.